Hey, I'm Troy Bronson, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. This episode has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. We connect you to a variety of contemplative teachers, hearing their story as well as sharing a meditative practice. And if you don't have time today to listen to LaWanda Thompson's story, you can take a look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins, and just feel free to skip ahead, and then you can come back later to the conversation. We've also learned from earlier episodes that it's helpful to separate that work of passive participation to a podcast and the active participating in meditation. And so toward that end, we've developed a pocket practice, which is basically the meditation only, and it's available as a separate, shorter, easier to share podcast episode. And you could look for that next week. Today, we're talking with LaWanda Thompson, who is a leadership development specialist working with business leaders around somatics. And I first met LaWanda when she was working with a group of activists and social entrepreneurs, giving us this kind of language almost for understanding how our bodies show up in the world and the stories we bring into the room with our bodies. And it's a fascinating conversation today about how our leadership is connected deeply to these bodies we carry around and the intuition that's connected to that. Speaking of our bodies, you could be doing a million different things right now. Maybe you're on a jog. Maybe you're planning a hike. Maybe you're finally cutting those toenails. That said, why not take a second and look around you, take a couple deep breaths, and enjoy listening in. Hopefully you'll be able to sit with us for the meditation in the second half. Well, LaWanda Thompson, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Troy. Happy to be with you today.
Yeah, so we're going to dive right in. I know your work is specifically around the area of somatics, and I think it would be interesting to just even hear how you got into that field, and then we'll unpack a little bit about what somatics, like the whole spectrum of what that entails.
Sure. Believe it or not, I was working in the pharmaceutical industry and was looking for leadership training opportunities and came across a somatic training.
Classic way in. Yeah, there
we go. Exactly. Yeah. Classic way into embodiment. and when I first heard about it, you know, I was talking to a coworker and I said, oh, that's really nice for you, with no real interest of exploring it for myself. And I happened to be on a trip, a business trip in New York, and was in a hotel that luckily let me open the windows. And I opened the windows that morning, and all of the street noise rushed in, the horns, the people walking. And I could just feel this sense of aliveness inside of myself. And I stopped in that moment and said, that must be what somatics is.
Hotel conference room, like the opposite of a hotel conference room.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so it was really in that moment of like just feeling all of the buzz of both my own aliveness, but then all of the aliveness of the many people out on the street in Midtown Manhattan doing their thing. And then just really wanting to begin to explore that. So it was shortly after that that I did my first somatics training, and that's now nearly a decade ago.
Wow. Wow. And so what, I mean, somatics training, just help us kind of frame, what is somatics?
Yeah. So, you know, it's that fun part where I said, even before I knew what somatics was, I was doing it. So it's just that way of how do you live inside of your body? If we go to like what's the origin of the word, it's coming out of a Greek origin. So it's really talking about the living organism or the body in its wholeness. And I like to say it's just our Western way of trying to explain all of the moods, emotions, psychology, social, energetic pieces that are us. And how do we really allow all of those to come alive and not just be a thinking self that's moving through the world?
There we go. Some of the ways I've facilitated in the past for some of the things we do at the Hive, we've had you'll ask folks to kind of consider their relationship to time and their relationship to space. And when you think about your relationship to space, I'll always say, like, you've ever walked into a room and knew you were walking into a conversation, and you could kind of feel energetically that, like, either you were interrupting a flow or you weren't invited into that flow or they had changed the flow. And you can kind of, you kind of know this in your gut. But we don't usually have words for describing that feeling. And is it similar to that sort of sense of kind of awareness that's from an intuitive space?
Absolutely. And it's really the connection of how do we really connect mind, heart, gut knowing into a, you know, three-way system that completely lights up and lets us live from that place. Many times we can really walk in the world with our brain fully alive and giving off a lot of information and us walking around thinking a lot of things. But imagine what difference there can be if we also say, well, what does my heart want? And what information is coming from that brain center? And then what is my gut telling me? What's my intuition and my, you know, inherent knowing that I don't have to create, I don't have to train, it's just already built into the system. And so really somatics is that part of like, how do we really connect all three of those pieces in a way that then we live our most rich and full life from all of that knowing?
So the retreat that we were at together, I just want to kind of describe it for our listeners. So that I think actually our workshop was in a yurt. I'm pretty sure you don't always work in yurts, but if I remember right, it was a round room. Yeah. And, but you know, there may have been 30 of us or so in a wider circle. And, and you had us, kind of notice, our own heartbeat and kind of notice our breath. And then you had us kind of, if I remember correctly, there was a sense of kind of knowing the person to my left and right without opening my eyes, but just kind of sensing that that person was there and then kind of widening that to the wider circle. Do I remember this right?
Correct. So, yeah, it's giving me a nice remembrance as well.
Yeah. And then you moved us through this place where we were kind of milling with one another, and then we're invited in different ways to, in a sense, get into each other's personal space, but by invitation, right? And so there was a little bit of like, without a word, someone could kind of nod and say, yes, I would like you to kind of step closer to me or put a hand on my shoulder or on my chest or what the case may be. And what struck me was without a whole lot of words, it wasn't like group therapy, there wasn't a lot of discussion, but just that ability to kind of perceive the room from a that imaginal space, and from the, and really, I guess what the language you gave to that, right, is from the body, instead of from my eyes or with my mind running another story, and the depth of that work. So I could imagine you found a ton of places for applying that, the skill set, because so many of us walk into a room and perceive it through our eyes or through what's running through our head.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So a lot of my background is also working inside of the context of the body and leadership. So it's both the philosophy and the belief around how do I lead as a system, right? Like I led big teams inside of the pharmaceutical company, so groups of 80, and how do I extend to a group of 80 and really be more than just a talking head in a room, but really embody kind of the philosophies and the direction that I want us to move in. We did a lot of work in the last team that I was leading around each person having their voice. And it's easy for a leader to walk in a room and say, hey, everybody should have a voice.
And everybody who wants that leader to accept them nods and says, yes. Yeah,
exactly. Right. But what does it mean for you to be present with their cares and concerns? And what has kept them from having a voice up until this point? It's a different style of leadership to really find a person and to say, who are you and what do you deeply care about? And how do the things you care about matter to the work we'll do together in this organization?
Well, let's stick with that because that's not what I expected in terms of embodiment or somatics. So tell me more how that sense of like, tell me what's important to you and how do I understand that as a leader? How does that begin to connect past the shoulders?
So it's the point of us beginning to say, you know, what do we long for? If we just look at a very fundamental level, we're all looking for a sense of dignity, a sense of safety, belonging, and connection. And we don't leave that at the door when we walk into an office space. Mm-hmm. And so part of the work that you can begin to do, and what I was able to do, was just to begin to go, what do you care about? And, you know, what has past experiences, how have those disrupted your sense of dignity, safety, belonging? And then what work do we need to do as a team to build an environment where we honor each other's dignity, safety, and belonging? And so that is, you know, for me, it was new territory. It was totally me exploring while I was learning. But I can also, you know, hear the feedback that I've gotten from people now that I haven't worked with some of them for years about how it profoundly changed their lives. I'll never forget one of the comments when I was getting ready to leave the organization. One of the gentlemen in the group came to me and he said, "My wife is really upset that you're leaving." And I had never met his wife.
Right? So this is rubbing off on, yeah. So is this something you've always, have you always been somebody really perceptive from that kind of intuitive embodiment sort of space?
I would definitely say yes, but I wasn't skillful and I wasn't purposely cultivating it. Meaning, I think the great thing that the somatics has taught me is that if I say I want to have more resilience, I can actually cultivate that. I don't have to wait for something bad to come along to shore up my resilience. I can be in regular practices that will allow me to have that muscle exercise so that when it's needed, it's already fully formed and available to me.
So you're saying that there are, we often talk here on this podcast about this kind of connection between how a contemplative practice informs the work that we do, the different places that we lead or work in startups or different ways that we engage folks. So what would those practices look like for somatics?
Yeah, that's the fun part. Anything that you do with an intention is a practice. So one of the groundings of somatics is our bodies are always practicing. There's not a moment when I'm not practicing. It's just a matter of if I'm consciously practicing or unconsciously practicing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I wake up in the morning and I grab my phone first thing in the morning, that's a practice. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, every night I spend 2 hours on social media, that's a practice. And so one of the beautiful parts is how do we begin to say, what do I want to be practicing on purpose? And so, you know, inside of that place of finding voice, for example, when I was doing my own personal work around finding my voice, I took vocal lessons, not for the intentions of being a great singer, but really for the intention of how do I release my voice in a full, powerful way.
Wow. So how would, so describe how, like you said, so as I got more into this, then I reach out and go, I want to find work more intentionally with my voice. So I'm going to go take voice lessons. Like what is the, describe the path a little more for folks that aren't familiar with somatics. Like, is there, did you have folks in kind of the discipline space of somatics suggesting these ways? Or are you just kind of a self-guiding, choose your own adventure person and went, I guess what I'm going to do is take voice lessons. Like, what's that journey, inward been like for you?
Yeah. It's been a little bit of both. Really from a somatic, if I just go a very pragmatic perspective, we typically will work with a commitment. And we speak about those commitments, not as like, I have this commitment in the world, but we talk about them as I am the commitment. So in the case of my vocal lessons, I started with thinking about, okay, how do I want to use my voice and what does that mean? And I landed on a commitment of, I am a commitment to fully utilize my voice inside of my leadership. So that's the first place you land. You typically will land inside of a commitment, a declaration. And if we look throughout history, there's been big declarations. I have a dream. Right? That's a declaration. And then from there, it's the actions that need to be taken to make that more than just a good idea. And so the voice lessons became part of taking that commitment of using my voice into action by actually beginning to do something that would cultivate and fine-tune my voice in a way that then I could use it in rooms of 100 and 200 and 300.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So where is what would you say your growing edge is right now then? Like, what is it that you're still exploring that you're kind of being kind of drawn to? Like, maybe it's what's your next voice lessons, you know, but maybe it's not that. It's like as you're getting more and more clear about this being a communicator in this way, leading folks in this way, what are you still learning or trying to figure out?
Yeah, so if I put it in the context of my current live commitment, it is I am a commitment to healing myself while healing others. And that really has taken me down a path of, you know, both doing the type of work that I did at the retreat that you attended, but then also saying, like, where are the areas that I still need to work on internally? I always say somatics is a path. It's not a, there's no journey. There's no final destination to this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a lifelong path. And I tend to liken it to video games of, you know, that one thing I may be working on, I may have mastered level 22, but level 36 is just ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's really where I am in the process of both looking at, you know, the things I need to work on and the places I want to get more comfortable inside of myself. And, you know, as I was thinking about the conversation you and I were having today, I was like, well, what's one of the things I want to keep working on? And it's, and the one liner came up of how do you get more comfortable with the uncomfortable things of life?
Mm.
Because if we look around, you know, there's lots of examples outside of ourselves of things that are really uncomfortable in the world right now.
Yeah.
And how do I just stay present with those? Not immediately trying to change them, not immediately trying to go in action, but just getting still and being present with what is. Not for the sake to just accept it, but for the sake of, like, just truly not rushing towards a solution until I can truly find my own ground. And then from a grounded place, I can go into action.
Let's take that example and kind of parse it a little bit more, because I think that some of the language is representing a deeper process that folks may not have a direct reference for. So say there's all these concerns, right, that we have access to through 24-hour news cycles and social media, and with all of that, there's an overwhelmedness, right? And then there's this pressure of, like, what is my response? How is this triggering a response that may be automatic that I don't want? How am I present to that? And then you're using this language of, like, is there a way to ground? Talk me through what does that mean to ground when you suddenly go, oh my gosh, there I go again. I just pulled out my phone. I see one more ping about this story or this situation, and I'm drawn into it, and I feel not grounded. What is it like to start to ground?
Yeah, I think that's the first moment, is to recognize that you are no longer grounded. And, you know, from a somatic sensibility, then the next thing would be to just check in with myself and to notice how this trigger, I'll call it, has impacted me. So it's clearly knocked me off center. And so it just becomes the conversation then of, okay, how has it in shape affected my shape? Are my shoulders curled in now? Am I looking down at the ground? Like, just noticing all of the ways that my body may have now reacted naturally, automatically to this trigger. And from there, it can be a check-in of a mood. You know, there's some days I turn on the news and I may say, oh, I just feel really sad by what I'm seeing. Mm. There's other days I may turn on the news and I go, I just feel really angry and enraged by what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for me to note that. So the first part of grounding is really just to recognize where you are in time and space and what's really going on. Not trying to sugarcoat it with, you know, I'm fine, I'm okay. Because, you know, part of the beauty of our humanness and our humanity is being impacted. And so it's noticing the impact. And then from the noticing, then it's the figuring out what will it take to come back to center. And that may mean different things for different people. I know the other morning I got up and I saw something and I was like, whoa, that's a lot. And it took about an hour of good spiritual music before I could find my way back to center. And so it was turning on the radio, or, you know, in my case, my iPod, and just finding the songs that really helped me to know that, like, there's a bigger, greater purpose than just this moment, as a way for me to find ground. Sometimes it can be as simple as I'll just stop and look at the tree and count the leaves. Just all ways that remind me of, you know, my felt sense of being present here in this moment. When that automatic response kicks in, we typically will want to go outside of ourselves. So it's finding all of those ways that allow us to come back inside of ourselves and to stay present with whatever's there.
So what if coming back ends up like repeating or revisiting older and prior pains? Like, yeah. As I work with folks, sometimes coming back is a hard reference point because home doesn't feel like home, you know, like that. Yeah. This, we're kind of maybe in a dissociative relationship with our body already. So,
yeah.
What is that like when you're working with folks and you recognize that there's not a grounded place they could name or recognize, or that the journey back seems to have a bigger burden than just staying bouncing between triggers?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, even when you say it, my heart just opens with a sense of empathy for that experience. Mm-hmm. Both as one I know well from my own life experience and one that I have worked with clients with. And, you know, there it's a matter of just being present with what is. At moments they say, you know, I can't help but associate. And I go, that's the beauty of the system. That's the only outlet that the system knows right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we honor that. And we actually are grateful that the system was wise enough to choose that path. Mm. And then over time, what we begin to say is, does that path still serve you? And is another path possible? You know, I was working with one client and I said, can we try just for the next week to not dissociate 10%, 10% less from where you were last week, right? We're not going to go for 100. And the great part, they came back and said, I can give you 5.
You're like, all right. Yeah. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. And I was like, awesome, let's do it. 5% of, you know, 5% more presence here and less dissociated.
Yeah.
And that becomes the practice for the week, right? Is like, in this moment, can I stay here 5% more? And it may feel really uncomfortable. And, you know, we're always working on how can we stretch the system. I always think of it as a balloon of, we want to put a little bit of pressure in it to really start to expand it. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to put so much pressure into it that the balloon explodes.
Yeah, there we go.
And so that's always what I'm looking for with clients, is knowing that life has impacted all of us in different ways. What's the stretch? And then what's too much?
So many of us think of like the stretching as like stretching of ideas, or we think of psychology as like what's being managed by our brain, right? And the frontal lobe, and like, so describe a little more of what you mean by stretching, or is there more there? What is it that we're stretching, you think?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, and it can come in a lot of different forms, because I don't want to discount the mental capacity and the thought process that, you know, we are blessed with. Mm-hmm. And so it may become, you know, a narrative of how we stretch the narratives that we hold. So if you have a narrative of, you know, I'm not enough, how do you begin to stretch that mm-hmm. with a different narrative
mm-hmm.
that may say, today I am enough, is, you know, an example to come from a narrative cognitive place, from a body and somatics, you know, more body oriented example. Even if a person says, you know, I walk through the world and every person who walks by me just makes me feel really uncomfortable, right? And so they're constantly in this state of on guard, most likely a safety shape, mm-hmm. about every person that's coming by them. And so a practice there can be of like, the stretch would be, can you walk through the mall and not collapse every time a person walks by you? Right? Very subtle practice. The person walking past may not even notice that you're doing it. But it's all the subtle ways of, can you let your shoulders find their natural position instead of pushing out or curling in?
Wow. And does, and so some of that work would be like find and recognize what is the natural position, and know that in a kind of an external way, and then go and reenact, go through the mall and reenact this, and just stay attuned to, like, is my body doing this?
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, you may have heard a lot, because there's a lot of popular conversation about power poses.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are an example of, like, that's not who I am, but if I keep practicing that pose, I can become that.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And so that's really what it is. It's not the intention that you just keep, you know, faking it till you make it. The intention is that you keep practicing, you know, that natural body alignment, so that over time, that's who you become. And then that becomes your new shape in the world.
It's taking on some agency, authorship for who I am, but not necessarily starting with story and starting with posture. Is that how you would describe it? Yeah.
And it's the part where you can, posture may be where you find it. Because I don't ever discount where people find it. Like, I'll have clients sometimes that will come and say, I'm working on my posture. And I go, great. But that's not what we're really going to be working on. we're going to be working on the story behind it.
Yeah.
So we're going to be looking for the story behind the posture of, you know, for example, if it's the, I always, you know, kind of lead head first into a room, then my question is, well, what's that taken care of? Right? Because it's a posture question of getting your head to go back over your shoulders.
Yeah.
But the deeper question is, well, what in life helped you to be shaped like this? And what was the benefit of being shaped like this? And then how can you still have that same benefit, in quotes, from a more grounded and centered place, right? Like, from our more natural posture. We come in, I love watching little babies, because they come in without any of the shaping. Like, their bodies move just how our bodies are meant to move.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, there's all the, you know, either the social conforming or the traumas that may happen over time. And then you see the bodies begin to shape differently. And so it is that part of the somatic opportunity to relearn what was already there when we arrived.
So let's take one more pass at that. You had used the language of, like, your intention being, I can heal myself while I'm equipping other people to heal. Say a little more about healing. How do you see this this work as healing, and just kind of unpack that metaphor a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not in the context of a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It's really much more in the context of the body's wisdom being unlocked and available.
Mm.
And it's that part of noticing where I can find a sense of safety. So, you know, I would say healing, safety is an example of healing. If I look out into the world, there may be a lot of narratives that tell me I can't be safe in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But healing will look like I can generate safety from the inside out, meaning, like, I'm not looking for an external confirmation of that. And so a lot of the work really is around really restoring the inherent pieces of ourselves that kind of get knocked a little bit off balance as we walk through the world. You know, if I look at my own journey, I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. I'm a African-American woman. And you can just go ahead and fill in all the narratives of what the world has told me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can choose to accept those narratives, positive or negative, or I can actually really do my own work around going, yeah, the world may not say I'm safe as a woman at night in an elevator with a strange person, right? But I can actually know inside of myself what's the best action I should take in those situations. I always use that example when I talk about, you know, a woman may get on an elevator and she says, something told me I shouldn't have got on that elevator because I knew something wasn't right in this situation, or I was walking in an alley and I could feel something was off. Mm-hmm. That's our somatic knowing. Mm. And those are the things that really, you know, those are the places we want to heal enough from this life experience to open up and let those places to be released from any contraction or armoring or banding that may be holding those back, and really going, no, I can really live inside of my full intuition about if I should go in that direction, if I should care if there's someone walking behind me, if I should really, you know, explore this next level of relationship with X, Y, or Z person.
That's powerful. So when, so when someone is, maybe somebody's listening and there's this sense of like, this is ringing a bell for me, but where would I start? What is that process of, because I'd imagine, we almost, you know, we use Myers-Briggs, is somebody intuitive or not intuitive? Like there's a sense that we're kind of stuck in a certain framework. And you're talking from a place of agency that there's a freedom to trade up or to renegotiate that framework as you need it to be. So how does someone begin down that path?
Yeah, I think it's that first recognition. So like you said, someone may be listening and they say, yeah, like this may mean something to me. Kind of how I said, oh, I opened the windows in New York and it meant something to me. Mm-hmm. So from there, it's just beginning to look at, how have you been shaped? I always like to just ask people, tell me about your life. A little bit of like that, you know, what are the things that have most informed who you are? That was really one of the first steps of my deeper healing work, was beginning to just go, oh yeah, like this thing that happened in my life really did impact me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really knowing where my accountability or that I wasn't accountable at all to the situation. But then going, okay, from this moment, what responsibility do I want to take to live my best life? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take away from the things that may have impacted us over time, but it starts to open the opportunity to say, I'm both going to acknowledge that those things are real, know that they have, you know, caused some level of harm or damage. And then I'm going to begin to find ways of exploring that. And that can look very different for a lot of people. You know, if I look at my own background, I'm trained in a lot of various healing arts. So I've watched people come through the path of somatics. I've watched people go through the path of polarity therapy, which is another energy-based work, mm-hmm. As well as emotional freedom technique, or, you know, just some of the more holistic paths that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I also don't discount traditional therapeutic process as well. And so it's really that part of beginning to just acknowledge that this path isn't the path for me anymore. And then deciding what path is, and slowly exploring those paths. Like there's no right or wrong, mm-hmm. and there's no time limit on it. We're not running a race that requires each person to jump off the couch and, you know, run 5 miles in the next 2 hours.
I am somatic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We're just saying, stand up. Acknowledge that you have a body. Acknowledge that this body has wisdom to offer you. Mm-hmm. And then just get really, really curious about what that is.
That's great. All right, so I want us to transition a second here to you guiding us into practice, but there's one more question that this kind of a couple times as we've been talking, this brought up, and that's just the power of touch, and in a culture that is really sensitive about inappropriate touch, for good reasons, right? People in authority that touch inappropriately or whatever that would be, just a little context, we at the Hive, as we've been talking to folks, and we kind of start setting intentions, and then after doing dozens and dozens of classes, now we're at a place where we kind of say, here are the five intentions that are common across our classes. And we had four, and then somebody mentioned a fifth that was really around around space and touch. And what we realized was some folks who might have this really rich experience then have this desire to just reach out and hug somebody that they shared that experience with. And there could be another person that's like totally not ready for that. And so kind of just laying out, like, you know, ask somebody before you hug them, that sort of thing. And then as time would have it, we're about 4 months into having that as one of the intentions. And then a facilitator came to me who does a lot of yoga work, who also is from a Latin culture that's very high touch. And she was like, I think we're missing something if we're pretending we're doing this work without touching. And what is the meaning and power of being able to hug someone or being able to touch somebody on the hand to tell them thank you, and like just acknowledging that. And I'm just curious, from the perspective of your work, how have you found both those boundaries really honored and at the same time creating courageous space for folks to actually make physical contact rather than keeping it all at this kind of layer of like everybody at these boundaries where there's no physical contact?
Yeah. No, that's a really great question, because I do think it's part of our mutual connection that we can restore through touch. But I also believe that we don't have to touch in order to mutually connect. Hmm. And so, you know, one of the things, and we did this in that retreat that we were together at, yeah. Giving people options. You know, I think the first thing is consent. And you hit that one on the head, because it's a matter of how many times are we told to enter into touch without permission. You know, I can bring my niece. The other day, I said, I looked at her and I said, can I give you a hug? And she said, no. And I said, okay. And my brother's reaction, was
go give your auntie a hug.
Yeah, go give your auntie a hug, right?
Yep.
So it was a great teachable moment about, no, like, she's asserting a boundary that we all need to learn how to honor and respect. And I know she loves me, and I know that we have a great relationship. So, you know, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
But really, like, that part of learning that we have a right to have a boundary, I think is incredibly critical. And then I think from there, it's that, like, how do you create the variations of contact that people can be with and tolerate? You know, I talked a lot about staying present. If you hug a person, they may pop out and dissociate. So not really the best move.
Right.
But if you actually stand across from them and just make direct eye contact and extend your intention towards them, that can be more powerful than the hug could have been for that person. And so, you know, so I do a lot of my practices, I'll design them with multiple ways of interacting. There may be times where I go, if you don't want to make any contact, just stand across from each other. If you want to allow a little bit of contact, okay, touch their shoulder. All right, if you're ready for level three, let's go full on and, you know, make direct contact, you know, facing each other. And people can be in choice about which one of those they're ready for at the moment. It goes back to that part I was talking about of, like, let them feel stretched, but don't let them feel like they've just been completely, you know, outside of their comfort zone to the point that they can't even receive it anymore. And so I do a lot of that work with my clients of both first building a safe container of just really appreciating who they are, what their background may be. If there's lots of trauma in their background, that may be something for me to know, because a touch may actually trigger something that has nothing to do with the moment. Mm. And so just being, you know, respectful and honoring that. But then just really saying, okay, can I sit next to you? And they may go, absolutely. And then I can extend all of that. And, you know, by extend, I mean, like, I bring my attention and I say, okay, I'm going to bring all the sensations in my system as though I was hugging this person. And so they can feel that. They can feel that just as much as they could feel my physical arms reaching out and hugging them.
Really? Well, this has been great. And I think for a lot of folks, this is going to give us a chance to begin to see where, how much practice is connected to the way that we're embodied, the way we bring our body into the room, what it is we're how our bodies interact with one another. As we get ready to make a turn towards you guiding us in a practice, is there anything you want to do to kind of set that up?
Yeah, sure. So I thought a lot about what we could do to have a little fun today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to spend some time really exploring the body's wisdom. And learning how we can just get a little bit more comfortable with the things that are uncomfortable. Because I think that that's one of the reasons why people tend to move away from the body. I feel that ache. I feel that pain. Let me just ignore it, numb it, avoid it. And so the practice today will be around just noticing those areas inside of ourselves, inside of our body, where there's tightness or contraction or tension. And we really want to just notice it and be present with it. It won't be an attempt to change it or to fix it. It will just be present a little bit more with something that may feel really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. We'll take a break and then we'll be right back. Thanks so much, LaWanda Thompson. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks. It was great, Troy.
Hey there. You've been listening to From the Hive. We're a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink, founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're a nonprofit located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati, and we get folks together in small groups, 6 to 8 weeks, to develop contemplative practices to engage with the arts and with activism. If you're interested in exploring somatics with some more depth, we have a couple classes coming up in May, a yin yoga class, as well as some qigong, which is some body energy work, as well as a class taught by Sarah Buffy and Demita Wright called Transcending Trauma, which is really for all sorts of folks who have been working around trauma or in their own life have recognized that their own trauma affects their work as a social worker or a teacher or different ways that we lead. And so this is a class that includes both social work as well as specific yoga and body practices. You can learn more about this and our other classes on our website, cincyhive.org. So let's get back now to our conversation with LaWanda Thompson and the practice she's going to guide us in. Well, we're back with LaWanda Thompson, this has been a great conversation.
Thanks, Troy.
Yeah, we're looking forward to practicing together. I'm just going to kind of sit back here and leave the mic to you and practice with everybody else.
Okay, sounds good. Let's dive in. So let's just take a few moments to get into a comfortable position. That can be sitting, standing, laying down, whatever feels right for you for the next 10 to 15 minutes. And then just bring your attention to this moment and just become aware of what do you notice around you. As I look around, I can see a tree outside of the window. And just take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And take this second to really make any adjustments you may need. So let's start by attuning to the body and the wisdom that it has to offer each of us. So in this, we're going to check in with the body just as it is right now. So just notice what's present for you. Notice what mood you may have. What sensations? Notice, are there any temperatures? Warm, cool? Any colors? Any places in your body where you may notice tightness, relaxation, numbness? So let's scan the body, sweeping your awareness through different parts of the body. again, we're doing this without judgment. We're not trying to fix or change anything. We're just becoming more and more aware of what wisdom is available to us below our shoulders. So we're going to just start at the crown of our head. And notice if there are any sensations there. Do you feel any tingling, numbness, tightness? Bringing your attention down into your face, your forehead, checking in with your eyes. Can you allow them to relax just a little bit more? Noticing your nose, your cheeks, your mouth, your chin, your ears. What sounds can you hear in your background? Bringing your attention to your neck. And sometimes it may be helpful to just make contact with that body part. If it's not one that you're used to paying attention to, then just allow your hands to help you bring your attention there. So bringing your attention down into your shoulders, your arms, your elbows, your wrists, your hands, and your fingers. Letting your attention drop into your chest and notice the rise and the fall of your breath and how your rib cage is able to expand as you breathe in and out. Noticing your stomach and your abdomen, that place where we get our gut feelings from. Bringing your attention to your lower back, down into your pelvis, down the thighs of both legs, and really letting yourself feel the weight of your legs. Noticing your knees, your calves, your feet. Now just take a deep breath and widen your focus so that you can notice your whole body. So sweeping your attention from the top to the bottom of your body, from side to side, and front to back. So now let's move towards bringing our attention to the areas of the body where there may be some level of holding, tension, or contraction. This is where we want to just explore getting a little bit more comfortable with that uncomfortable feeling that you may have. And I'll also just note, if you feel nothing, that's okay too. That's the part to be present with right now. So just allow yourself to be present with that part of yourself where you can feel the tension or the holding or the contraction. Some of the usual suspects in the body are the jaw. So just notice if you're holding or if there's tightness in your jaw. In the stomach, just notice if there's any contraction there. And then for me, it tends to show up in my lower back. So notice if you feel anything there. No need to change it or fix it. Just notice it. So for the next few minutes, we're going to be present with it And at any moment in there, if it becomes too much, then just relax and release it. Do whatever that means for you. A lot of times for me, that means just shaking it off. But let yourself try it on. Let yourself explore what it means to just be present with those things that can normally lead us to an impulse of pushing away from. In this moment, we just want to be present with it and to connect with it. So invite in a mood of curiosity and loving kindness about the tension or the contraction that you're feeling. Not judgment, not a desire to push it away, but just get really curious about what it has to offer you. And then just take your hand and place it on that part of your body where you feel the tension. And then just ask yourself, what is this contraction taking care of? And this isn't a cognitive thought. This is just first guess. Notice what narratives come up for you. Acknowledge it, and then let the narrative go. Keep bringing your attention to the contraction. And again, if it helps to make physical contact with that, you can do so. And just remember that you have the capacity to be present with the discomfort. And now just check in with yourself. Is the discomfort too much? We talked about feeling stretched. Is it stretching you? Or is it feeling like more than a stretch? If so, just try to decrease that intensity by about 10%. And then check in with yourself again. Now, keeping your attention on the contraction. This time we're going to blend with it. And by blend, I mean, how do we want to acknowledge it or affirm it? Many times when there's a contraction in our lives, we want to say, nah, you, go away. But in this moment, we want to thank it. We want to honor it. And so while bringing your attention to that place of contraction, what do you want to say to acknowledge and affirm this contraction? For myself, I'm making contact with my lower back. And I just want to say thank you for reminding me that I have a back. And for me, that also brings up a remembrance of a history, a past, all of my competency, all of my ancestors. They all live at my back. So just notice what comes up for you and notice how your body responds when you're acknowledging and affirming it. So take a deep breath. And check in with yourself again. How are you doing? So we want to complete this part of the practice by just allowing yourself to release the contraction and return to what for you is a more comfortable position. Right? We want to be in this practice of being with things that are uncomfortable, but not to the extent that it's too much for your system. So shake it off. And if you've allowed your eyes to close during this practice, just allow your eyes to come open and ground yourself back into noticing what's around you. So maybe notice what's going on outside of the window, or the sounds you can hear, or the things you can smell. To end this session, we're going to just take a few minutes to acknowledge the effort it took for each of us to explore that discomfort. And we'll do this with a gratefulness practice. So start by bringing your attention to the earth and all living things that call this planet home. That can include the birds in the air, the dolphins in the sea, or the spider in the grass. And just speak out loud one thing on earth that you're grateful for. I'll acknowledge my Chihuahua palm tree. Now bring your attention towards the sky and the mystery. Acknowledging the stars, the moon, the divine, the unknown. And just speak one thing you're grateful for in this domain. For me, that would be black holes. Next, extend your attention outward towards all humanity, bringing our attention to all people of the world and extending loving kindness to all with no exceptions. And just speak the name of one person that you're grateful for. My brother Lyle. Now bring your attention to your own self in your own internal landscape and body, and the ways of being that have allowed you to be here in this moment, exploring more about what it means to be embodied. So just allow one hand to rest on your heart while the other rests on your center. That's about a few inches below your belly button. And just speak to yourself, one thing about yourself that you're grateful for. For me, that would be my ability to endure for the sake of others. So thank you for joining me in this practice today. An opportunity for us just to explore the body's wisdom and to get a little more comfortable with those things that we all experience as uncomfortable. And I'll turn it back to you, Troy.
This is great. Luana, this has been a real treat. Thanks so much for your time and just your attentiveness to this work.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a great conversation.
You bet. And we'll put in the show notes ways to get in touch with your other work and ways folks can find you. You do some kind of coaching and that sort of stuff as well, right?
I do.
Yeah. Well, good. Thanks so much. And we'll look forward to staying in touch.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets up with mindful everyday living. Today, we've been talking with LaWanda Thompson, and you can check out the show notes for more ways to connect to her work. You can be on the lookout for a pocket practice, a shorter version of this later in the week. From the Hive is produced by Joy Taylor. Take a deep breath and enjoy the day.